speaking on this program is Brother E. Ray Jerkins.
To talk with you along the subject of building better homes. In fact, all that we'll be discussing during the period of time is building better homes. When we think about the home and think about the family, there's one thing that we should be aware of. There are problems facing us now, problems entirely different from what we've seen over the past several years. I'm dealing now in problems in my private practice that I didn't deal with 15 years ago and so. Things have changed tremendously. We're now at a time where the divorce rate during the 1970s actually tripled. Would you believe that when we came out of the 1960s and we wound up 1969, we had something like 2 million marriages that year. We had something slightly over 300,000 divorces. But in 1976, we still had slightly more than 2 million marriages, about 2,300,000. But by the end of 1976, for the 1 year, we had passed 1 million divorces. We're now at the point where it isn't 1 out of 4, it isn't 1 out of 3, but it's about 1 out of 2, and in many areas, breaking it down county-wise, 1 out of 1, sometimes the divorce rate actually exceeds the number of marriages that are performed. So this morning, let's talk about the subject, how can we have better homes? What's the biggest problem we deal with? I'm oftentimes asked that. What's the biggest problem? And in order to sell newspapers and magazines and books and to get a lot of publicity, you say sex and finances are the biggest problems, but that isn't so. As a practicing clinician, the biggest problem that we really have is the problem of lack of preparation. Newlyweds generally know more about the wedding and about the parties and about all of these other things than they do about the marriage relationship that is actually expected of them later on in the marriage. And this is true. The big problem we have in marriages now is lack of preparation. We're prepared for everything else except getting married, staying married, living in marriage. We are prepared for the ceremony, for the reception, for the honeymoon, but for the everyday aspects of marriage, we're not prepared. I'm involved quite often in premarital counseling, so let me give you a good illustration. Several years ago, a couple whose daughter was a sophomore in high school were very much upset about the young lady who was very much in love with a young man who was a junior, and they were desperately in love to the extent they were planning to be married. Well, the parents wanted the young lady to come see me, and she did. And into my office walked a very charming little girl, and I say that kindly, but she was just a wisp of a lady, and as she sat down, we chit-chatted a moment. Finally, I said, well, tell me about your boyfriend. Tell me about your fiancé. And she says, ooh, ooh, and she started oohing and ahhing. I said, down, girl, just settle back down. Let's talk about it seriously. So I said, tell me about him. Oh, she said, he's about 5'9", weighs 175. And I said, wait a minute, that's not what I want to know. What does he do to make a living? You know, getting married is a real business economic venture. I don't care how you cut it. Getting married really is a point of establishing finances along with it. So I said, what does he do to make a living? And she said, oh, he sacks groceries. Now, should any of you boys in here be grocery sackers? That's all right. Nothing wrong with it. I don't believe that 50 years from now you'd like to be the outstanding grocery sacker boy. I think you'd want to have higher objectives, but I said, well, does he make enough for you all to live on? She said, oh, yes. I said, how much does he make? She said, I don't know. And I said, but now, wait a minute. You just told me you're going to have enough to live on. She said, yeah. But you don't know how much he makes. She said, well, no. So we started out, and I started figuring the number of hours that he worked after school on weekends. And I figured at that time, for easy figuring with me, I gave him $3 an hour. So then I figured that for the number of hours, he would make this much. Then I said, what are you going to do? And she said, I'm going to babysit. Well, that's fine for a period of time, but years later, I don't think this would be an occupational career type thing. So I figured how much she would make, how much the young man would make, put it together, and then we started working on a budget. The budget we talked about was simple things like rent. They were going to live with an aunt. That's no good. That's number one. That's bad right there. If you can't afford to live by yourself at the very beginning, then you better wait till you can afford to get out from the families. But anyway, we worked that out. And we put in the utilities, and we put in all of the other things that go with it, and finally we wound up with $5 a month left over. For instance, if she had figured they were going to make $400 a month, we spent only $395. We were within their budget. She sat back in her chair, and she said, see there, Mr. Jerkins, we can do it. We've got $5 a month left over. Well, now, any of you that have been married any length of time knows there is such a thing as a budget gremlin. We have one at our house. He lurks around the corner watching for any extra money that you might have. And if you're going to have $5 left over, then your battery goes dead and you've got to put in a new battery. Or the washing machine breaks down, or you spill something on you somewhere. He gets that extra $5. But she said, we still have $5 left over. And so I said, but now just a minute. You remember a while ago, you told me that every Friday night, you and your boyfriend went down to the pizza hut. And you had a pizza. And she said, we did. And I said, now, honey, when you get married, you cannot go to the pizza hut anymore. She said, why not? There are a whole bunch of other young people that go there. And I said, but the point is, you can't afford to go. You don't have the money. And at that time, she said, let's look at that budget again. So we looked at the budget again. We reworked to the best of our ability. Still couldn't get it in. But the point I want to make now is, I heard from the parents probably 2 or 3 years after that. And the couple did not marry. This seemed to be something that really stopped them. And I look back at it now, it's the only time I ever had a pizza help me keep a couple from getting married. I tell that as an actual real story, which it is. See, I didn't really make brownie points with her until I got down to the point she could relate to the pizza. I don't know whether it's mozzarella or sausage or whatnot, pepperoni, but anyway, she got the point that it is a matter of finances. Can we really afford to get married? Now, a lot of times you talk to young people and you'll say, talk to them, and they'll look at you and they'll say, yeah, that's all y'all think about. Your generation is money. It's all y'all think about, money. Didn't you see the sunrise this morning and the birds, the trees and the clouds? Yes, I saw all of that. And I also saw the mortgage payment and the utility bill that happened to come in. Now, if you think that money isn't important, young people, may I suggest that this afternoon or any time, go down to any one of your grocery stores, get your little basket and go up one aisle and down the other and get all of these goodies and put it in. Come to the checkout counter and let them total it all up for you. Then when they total it up, and they say, all right, I need $67. Look at them and say, that's all y'all think about down here is money. Well, they'll say, yes, we think about money. We need $67. Then you look at them and say, didn't you see the sunrise and the birds this morning? And the beauty of the green budding trees. They'll say, yes, but I need $67. And if you keep on with that foolishness, they'll pat you on the head and call the paddy wagon and carry you off, which they probably ought to do. We have to realize that money is important for a couple. It takes more than just being in love to get married. Now, you must love one another. There's no doubt about that. But love doesn't overcome everything. Things have changed in the past many, many years. I remember presenting this particular lesson, as I always do at this point in the series. And as I was standing in the vestibule talking to some people, an elderly lady came by, and she was not impressed by anything I'd said that morning. Not a thing. So she came by, she shook my hand, and she said, let me tell you, Mr. Jerkins, you missed the whole point. I said, I did. And she said, you sure did. It doesn't take finances to make a good marriage. It takes good love to make it, and that overcomes. Let me tell you, she said, about my granddaddy and grandmother. Now, here I am talking to a lady that's up about 70 years old or 70. I don't know how old she was. But let's be gracious and say she was that old. So she was talking about someone probably 80 years ago or 85, way back yonder. And she said, my granddaddy was 16 years old when he married my grandmother, who was 14. They lived on a farm back up here, raised 9 children because they had love. Well, now, look, we don't live back in 1880 or 1900. Things are different now. A 14, 15, or 16-year-old boy back then was mature to the level of maybe a 20, 21, 22-year-older now. But the whole point is, things have changed. My father went to work working full-time when he was 12 years old. He worked some 52, 53 years for the railroad. He had to go to work back at that time. Father had died and mother was a widow, no income, so he went to work at 12. I wasn't working full-time. Now, a 16-year-old boy now is not as mature as a 16-year-old boy back then. By the way, you know about all that a 16-year-old boy can do now? Is a wheelie on a Yamaha that mom and daddy's bought him. And about all the 16-year-old girl can do is run out 40 gallons of hot water washing her hair. I say that very kindly, but I think all of you will get the idea of the spoofing that I'm doing in it. But really, we're not really mature and ready at the present time. Although, last year, some 45% of all of the brides were between the ages of 15 and 18 years old and had known their fiancés, their prospective husbands, for less than 6 months, as best our statistics tell us. Are we prepared to get married? It doesn't matter how much you love somebody. It doesn't matter how much you love something. Unless you can afford it and count the cost, then stay out of it. This creates problems. You know, the Bible talks about counting the cost. Count the cost. When our sons had left home and were gone, I was talking to my wife one day about buying another car, and she said, well, that's a good idea, Ray. She said, you've been wanting another car, a little sports car. Why don't you see about one? Drive back and forth the office. I thought that was a good idea. I said, well, what did you have in mind? She says, honey, I've seen one of these little cute Mercedes SLs. Why don't you look about that? Now, some of you all smiled at that time. See, I didn't know enough to smile. I didn't know what... I never priced one of them, so I stopped by the dealership on the way to the office one day, or coming home, I forget what. And I walked across the lot, and I looked very successful. The salesman came out, and he met me and said, sir, can I help you? And I said, yes, sir, I'm interested in one of your little SLs. He said, I got two great ones. The little black one, a little silver one. I said, how much are they? He said, the little black one's $19,500. Little silver's $22,500. He didn't even stutter. Not at all. All I could think of at that moment was, sir, do you have a brochure? So I turned around, went home, and told my wife, I said, you have to be out of your ever-loving mind. It doesn't matter how much you love something. It's, can I really afford it? Now, young people today in getting married, how can they make a living? Are they skilled? What services do they have to render? And in order to get married, first thing the young couple getting married has to have is a new car. Must have a new car. You could not get married without a new car, probably. And you have to have an apartment, one of the finest, and a lease on it for a year. You must have a stereo, not just a little old stereo. You have to have the receiver, and you have to have the speakers, and all that bunch of stuff. Then you have to have a color television. You could not live without the color television, the little gizmo that turns it off from across the room, you know. Well, you get all of this, and then you assume that your statement is, but let me tell you, we can afford it. I make $250 a week. My wife makes $150 a week. That's $400. That's $1,600. That's roughly $19,000 a year. Look how much we have. And so they spend all the $19,000. Then what happens is one day the wife comes in and says, honey, guess what? Now there are going to be three of us. The salary is going down. And how are we going to afford it? Now what happens is the couple gets into having difficulty about living within their means. Yes, they have financial problems. Not because it is finances that cause the problem. Number one, they couldn't support their family. Or number two, they had no skills to support their family. Number three, they did not plan wisely in it. Number four, now they're having to pull back. Number five, they are having arguments over how much we can spend and what we can and we cannot do. Couples, in order to get married, in order to have a good home, must start out financially considering this an economic venture. Yes, you must be in love, and I'm not minimizing that at all. But there has to be the consideration, what about our future? All right? Preparation for marriage. Then there's another area that I'd like to consider about how to build a better home. In order to build a better home, we must, of necessity, understand the proper role relationship. I use the word role relationship because sociologically and psychologically we often use this, but let me break it down a little bit differently. In the good marriage relationship, you have to understand that marriage is a partnership relationship. We are partners in marriage. That's all there is to it. Now, in our vocabulary, we have introduced a thing called woman's work and man's work. Have y'all ever heard that phrase? You have. This is woman's work and that's man's work. I don't know where we ever got that, except it came from an agrarian society probably 100 years ago. We live in a different atmosphere, in a different sphere, everything else than what it was 100 years ago. There is no such thing now in the average family as woman's work and man's work, when over 50%, and the number's about 57%, of all of the mothers work outside of the home 40 hours, just the same as the husband works outside of the home. Let me give you a good illustration of what I'm talking about. Many physicians make referrals to me in my practice. And several years ago, a physician told a young couple to see me. The young man called and he said, Mr. Jerkins, we're having serious problems. Something's wrong with my wife. She won't let me touch her. I don't know what's wrong. We just must see you as soon as possible. So I got them in the next couple of days. And I'll share with you a little bit of what all happened. Very fine, young couple. They had one child. Both the mother and the father worked. The child stayed in the daycare center all day, every day. So I said, well, give me your routine. He'd given me a little background. And he said, well, we get up about 6. I get up and get showered and shaved and dressed and read the paper. Wife gets up and she gets the baby ready and gets breakfast ready and then she gets ready. Then we leave to go on to work. Take the child by the daycare center. Then we go on. I leave my wife at her office. I go into my office. Then in the afternoon, I come by, pick up my wife, go by and get the baby, and then we go home. That's it. And I said, no, then what? He said, well, we're home. I said, yes, but then what happened? He said, well, I usually will stop in the den and read the paper, and I watch television. She goes on in with the baby into the kitchen, and she starts fixing supper, taking care of the baby, and maybe puts in a load of clothes. And I said, then what? Well, when supper's ready, she'll call me, and I'll go in and eat. And that's it. And I said, no, then what? He said, well, she usually stays in the kitchen, cleans it up, takes care of the baby, and I'll go back into the den. I'll read the paper or magazine or watch television, something of that, or doesn't somewhere or something, and that's it. I said, no, then what happened? I said, well, she finishes in the kitchen. She comes through and said, you know, a lot of times I'll get up and I want to love on her and hug on her, and she'll say, leave me alone. Don't you touch me. I said, I don't know what's wrong with her. Something's bound to be wrong with her. Well, we worked out a solution to that. It was not too difficult. We changed the routine. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, he stopped in the den, and she went on into the kitchen. Tuesday and Thursday, she stopped in the den, and he went to the kitchen. Then the next week, it switched. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, she stopped in the den, and he went to the kitchen with the baby, and we swapped it around. Now, what was wrong was, and about 2 weeks is all that it took to clear the matter up, what was wrong, when she got home, she'd work. Why couldn't she sit down and watch Walter Cronkite? Why couldn't she sit down and read the paper? No, she had to feed the baby. She had to get dinner ready. She had to clean the kitchen up. And as a result, she was just plumb mad all evening, every evening, because he was not in there helping her. But he said, that's woman's work. Now, she'd already solved one particular part before they got to me. He would not carry the garbage out. And as you know, men all over the world have inherited the job almost genetically of carrying out the garbage. Well, he wouldn't do it. So she, the way she had handled that was, she would take the garbage and stack it behind his chair. And if he wouldn't carry it out, she would stack it in his chair. And she had worked that out, so normally she would get it taken out over a long period of time. Now, they didn't have a sex problem, as this young man seemed to think. Do you know what they had? They had a problem of not understanding and not knowing what the role relationship is and was and is to be. Let me say this. Marriage is a partnership. We'll talk about this in one of the other lessons, but the idea is, men and women, when both of them are working, and I really, at this point, it doesn't either disturb me whether the woman is employed financially outside of the home or working at home. When you get back home, it's up to both the husband and the wife, the mother and the father, to look after the house. Both of them take care of the children. Both of them wash dishes. Both of them prepare a meal. It's not going to hurt. Did you know what is excellent marital therapy? Four hands in hot dishwater, two male and two female, and it won't hurt you at all. Husband and wife in the kitchen working together. Husband and wife dealing with the children. It's what I call a role relationship that we are doing it together. But here's our problem, and I hear this all the time. I hear it all the time. Where the husband makes the statement or the wife makes the statement primarily, and men, I'll have to put it on this latter basis, said I get tired of waiting on him. He works and I work. Then why do I have to come home and do all of this, and he doesn't help me? So I would suggest in the role relationship, make up the bed. A lady called me the other day, and she said, I don't know what you did, but let me tell you what happened. I am just delighted over it. Well, I thought something fantastic had happened. She said, when I got up this morning, I went on in to fix breakfast, and I came back in the bedroom, and he had made up the bed. Well, you would have thought some earth-shattering something had happened, but so far as she was concerned, she said, that's the first time ever I can remember that. My point is, men, why don't you make it up sometimes? Why don't you help in the kitchen? In order to build a better home, understand the proper role relationship. My home, too, it's a partnership. But we'll have more to say about that a little bit farther. Now, another area, to build a better home, we need more commitment, dedication to home. Now, this is an area that, frankly, I do not have the answer for it. But let me talk about it. I don't know whether you have it here or not. But I'm sure that you probably do. That there are many people that can find any number of excuses to be away from home after work. You don't want to come home. When your hour's over, where do you go? Well, you go out to this place or that place. Our taverns, our lounges, the bars are all geared to the 5 to 7 o'clock hour. That's the happy hour. And the happy hour, two drinks for the price of one. And also, it's geared for the fact, come by here and stop and drink and then wander on home some other time. Look, you be committed to home that when you finish your work, you go home. Husbands and wives, go home. I'm dealing with this and finding it more and more. A man finishes work, but he doesn't go home. A woman gets off work, but she doesn't go home. Look, you need to be at home. Our relationship means that from the time I get up in the morning to the time I leave, I'm a father and a husband. The time I'm out at work, I'm a father and a husband. And as soon as I'm off work, I'm a father and a husband. Just the same as the wife is a mother and a wife the same period of time. Marriage is a partnership, both of us working together at it. So when you finish work, go home. I don't know about your civic organizations here, but I am very much opposed to civic organizations that have night meetings. Now, I'm a member of Kiwanis Club and have been for in excess of 10 years and maintain senior member status now, so I'm not opposed to civic clubs. But I wonder about these where we take up additional nights. And I'd like to encourage that we not take a night out when the family needs husband, wife, mother, and father at home with the children. May I suggest then that we realize when we finish work, let's go home. A lot of times we finish work, we want to stop and drink a while, and what happens? We stop at the friendly 7-Eleven or the friendly overnight place, and we pick up a six-pack of beer. We drink one then, one on the way home, one when we get home, one before dinner, one with dinner, and one after dinner. And that's the intake of alcohol that we have. When we finish work, go home, but don't go home drunk. Don't go home blitzed. Go home so that you can be a part of the family relationship. And also, if you're going to be late getting home, call and let your mate know that I'm going to be late. Don't just wander in about 9:30 or 11 o'clock or something like that, and then your mate says, "Where you been?" "Oh, I forgot to tell you, I'm going to be coming in late." Another thing, commitment means that a husband or a wife has a right to know where their mate is at any time. For instance, I was involved in a case just a couple of days ago. The man is very incensed that his wife asked him at 1:30 in the morning when he finally came in, said, "Where have you been?" Got off work at 6. He took the long way home. Look, when you leave your work, your husband or your wife needs to know where you are. There's no dropping out of sight for hours. Commitment means when you finish, you go on home. And if you say, "Well, now wait, you have no right to ask me where I am." While you're at work, we understand. But when work is over, go home, be with your family. That's what I'm talking about. A wife does have the right to know where her husband is. And a husband does have the right to know where his wife is. But I've dealt in cases where they drop out of sight 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 hours. You have no idea where they are, what's going on. And this is not good. Commitment means we go home. Not the last thing I do is every day is dial the house and say, "Babe, I'm on my way home. What you need?" Now, by this I mean that I'm going to be home in about maybe 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes. And it means, do you want me to stop by the store and get milk or bread or any little thing that you might have forgotten during the day or anything else? Now, that's the general thing that I mean. Of course, one day I called out and I said, "Babe, getting ready to leave. What you need?" She said, "I was by Kane Sloan a while ago and saw the cutest little pantsuit. You might get that for me." Well, I hadn't anticipated that, but I thought I'd go along with her on it. So I asked her to meet her size, and I said, "What was it and where was it?" And so I went by and I took it home to her. Now, I would not recommend that. I make the last payment on it next month, I believe, something like that. But the idea is, stay in touch with your family. This is commitment and this is dedication. Then there's another area. In order to build a better home, there's a marvelous verse of Scripture that we need to use for this point. To build a better home. "Therefore to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin." It's in James chapter 4, verse 12. And let's put it in the home relationship. In the home relationship, we have this. If you know what to do and you don't do it, you've sinned. Now, the word sin means technically in Greek, miss the mark. That's all. In other words, if you know what to do and you don't do it, you miss the mark. If you're out shooting at a target and you miss the target, you'd say, "Oh, I sinned. I missed the mark." Shooting a basketball at a goal, you would say, and you miss it, you'd say, "I've sinned. I missed the mark." I'm very directional in my work. And I expect the people, if they're going to stay my clients, to work with me. If they don't, I don't want them as clients. And one thing I ask them to write is this. 10 things your mate does that upset you, 10 things you do that upset your mate, and then here's a key one. 5 things you could do to help your marriage. 5 things. And invariably, whenever we get into the situation and I get all the profile analysis done and everything else done, I have found that if this couple had done those 5 things, they wouldn't have needed me. The point of it is, you know what it would take to please your mate. Why don't you do it? You know what you could do to have a better marriage relationship. Why don't you do it? You know what it takes. But a lot of us are too stubborn to do it. Sometimes I put that under the guise of things that you could do to please your, to make your mate happy, things your mate could do to make you happy. And I remember stating that in one of my lessons one day, and a lady came by me at the close of the lesson, and she said, "You know, you were asking there what my husband could do to make me happy?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "You know what it is?" And I said, "Well, no." She said, "Drop dead." And she walked on, never cracked a smile. She didn't. She just walked on. I don't know who she was. I have no idea. But she wasn't kidding me at all. Well, I don't mean that kind of thing. Well, what could you do? You know what it would take in order to please your mate. Why don't you do it? Sometimes, you know what we say? Sometimes we say, "Well, you know, you made your bed. Now you got to stay in it." You've heard that, haven't you? "You made it, now you just lay there. That's it." Well, look, now, I disagree with that. I travel extensively. You go into various places, you sleep in all kinds of beds. Sometimes, you know, you're jittery from making connections and flights and getting there and getting in and psyched up and such as this. You get in to go to bed, and I wiggle and I roll. And sometimes, you know, you get the cover in a mess. The whole bed's in a mess. You try to straighten it out, and there's not a thing in the world to do, and I've done this several times. You get up, turn the light on, make the whole bed over again, and start from scratch. Now, I could say, "Oh, boy, this is in a horrible mess, but I made my bed, got to lay in now." No, why don't you get up and make it up? Why don't you get up and do something positive about it? You know what it would take to please your mate, to help your marriage. Go into your marriage, then, with a positive attitude that I can make some changes and I will make some changes to build a better home. To him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. You have missed the whole mark. You've missed the whole point. Now, in your mind, think back. What could I do? What is it? What can be done? You know what it takes. And it isn't that difficult. I do not agree with sometimes some of the things that people have written down are almost absurd and ridiculous. But you list the things that you could do to improve your marriage, and then you know what to do. And invariably, in every case, I have found that the things that the couple wrote down at the very first day I saw them, if they had done this prior to coming, they would never have needed me. So I would say, in order to build a better home, we would need to start in the home relationship with a better attitude. And the attitude says, "I am going to do whatever I can to make my mate happy." It's dedication to home, dedication to family, commitment to home, commitment to family, commitment to husband, and commitment to wife. Now, all of these things I'm talking about, these are things that we can do to build a better home. These are things that I can do to build a better home. And have you noticed, they're not really what I would call earth-shattering, scientific things you've never heard of. Each one of you could say, "Well, yes, I'm aware of these things." But the point of it is, we don't do them. To our young people, I would suggest and just reemphasize one thing. When you get married or you think about it, sit down realistically and say, "How are we going to finance our marriage? How are we going to finance the home and support it?" Then you ask the question, "Are we going to work together? Or am I going to say, me master, you slave, me Tarzan, you Jane type situation, and my wife is to wait on me in everything?" And I hear this lots and lots of times. We then need the idea of commitment. When work is over, go home. Spend time at home. If you think you're spending a lot of time at home, may I suggest you that you do a time study chart. I required this of an executive just the other day, a time study chart. He was to keep it, his wife was to keep it. How much time they spent together, literally, actually together, during a 9-day period. One day they spent together a total of 5 minutes. Another day they spent together, just the husband and the wife, a total just of, while they were awake, while they were conversing, a total of 15 minutes. One day was 25 minutes. The longest any one day was an hour and a half. And I think I totaled up that during the 9 days, they spent slightly more than 2.5 hours together, just the two of them, talking, conversing, and we kept it on a real scale. So commitment to home. Can't have a good home relationship when you have only about 2.5 hours a week in a relationship between the husband and the wife. And then we have, as I pointed out the very last, you know what it would take, and that is a good attitude. I know what it's going to take to improve my marriage, and therefore I will do it.